Rainmaker.fm is brought to you by Authority, the content marketing training and networking community dedicated to accelerating your skills and success. Registration for Authority will close to new members on Wednesday, September 30th, 2015. Go to getauthority.com to learn more.
Welcome to Technology Translated. I'm your host, Scott Ellis. And in this episode, we're going to tackle one of the most common and yet challenging questions in all of web development. How much does it cost to build a website? My guest today is the founder of Web Savvy Marketing, Rebecca Gill. And Rebecca is going to provide us with a tremendous amount of insight from her years of experience in running an agency on how we can best prepare ourselves to go out and find an agency to help us build a website, the questions that we need to ask, the things that we need to be thinking about, and how to make sure that our budget and the agency we choose are aligned to produce the right website for us at the best possible price. If you are in the market to redo your website or get a new website built, this episode is going to have some invaluable information for you. So let's tune in and hear what Rebecca has to say. Rebecca, thank you for joining me for a second time to record this episode. I appreciate your willingness to do this all over again.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. So for everybody's benefit, we tried this once, had considerable technical difficulties, and had to dive back in and re-record the episode, and Rebecca was kind enough to graciously join me one more time. So today we are going to talk about how much it costs to build a website. That is usually one of the first questions that we get when somebody calls. It's a common question. It's an understandable question for people who don't necessarily know what goes into building a website. So hopefully we'll be able to pull back the curtain for people a little bit and help them get better insights into what's really involved so that they can get a better understanding of why it costs what it does and why they get so many different price quotes and things like that. Right out of the gate, you and I both get this question a lot. How much will it cost me to build a website? When you first get that question from somebody, how do you answer it?
I don't give them a number because it's truly impossible to give one, you know, right off the bat, because there's so many factors that you just don't know, you know, at that point in time. And a lot of times we'll get inquiries from people and it will give you 1 to 2 sentences and ask for a quote. You know, there's so many variables that go into a website, it's really impossible to be able to provide any type of accuracy with an estimate, you know, with that limited information. So our route is try to educate them and, you know, talk through some of the things that would go into pricing of a website and considerations that they should be thinking about that would help us, you know, obtain more information and then prepare a solid estimate for them. So yeah, that's kind of the route that we take. And if we have to go through and give them like a type of, you know, an illustration of why it's difficult, I like to use the example of, you know, I walk into a car dealership and that car dealership sells everything from like a Ford Focus up to a Mercedes-Benz. And if I just walk up to the car salesman and don't give him any other information besides standing there and ask him, I'd like you to give me a quote for a new vehicle, he's going to have a really hard time giving me an estimate or giving me a price because he doesn't know all the factors that are important to me as the buyer. You know, I could be the soccer mom who's got to lug around a ton of equipment and 4 kids and a dog, so I need a minivan, you know, or something large. I could be, you know, really trendy and have no kids and want a sports vehicle. I could have a budget that is the Ford Focus and could never be the Mercedes-Benz. You know, aesthetics could be really important to me, or I could be more focused on function. So there's a lot of costs that go in criteria that go into developing, you know, that answer for the salesman. It could be $20,000 or it could be $200,000, and a website's the exact same. So again, you know, I try to educate them, and if I can't, you know, get through right away and try to point out some considerations, I start using illustrations like that so I can help them better understand the process.
I love the car analogy. In fact, that's one of my favorites as well. I usually start with, okay, am I building you a Honda or am I building you a Ferrari? So it's a good place to start. Do you have a way to early on to vet people or help gather a little bit more information before you get into that quote process?
Our inquiry forms that we have on our website are definitely designed to limit the inquiries. And I know that probably sounds counterintuitive, but we were getting so many inquiries in from people who were completely not a fit for us, whether it be a budget fit or a functional fit, you know, or just what they wanted. I've tried to really hone in on the inquiry forms so that people start to make selections. And that will help them decide quickly that we're not what they're looking for. You know, they need another development shop, or it helps me get a little bit of a basis with them. And then I start asking, you know, questions to try to develop just that initial fit. You know, and I try to do just an initial fit. I don't need a lot, but I need a little bit so that I can enter into that discovery process with them and allocate the time to really dig into their project and provide a proposal.
Do you find that people use the inquiry form a lot, or do you direct people to that? I've tried that, and I tend to have a lot of people that still want to just call me and they don't fill out the form. So do you redirect them, or do you go ahead and have the conversation?
We actually took the phone number off of our website. And
wow.
That wasn't by choice. Because we do custom development, and you know, we'll do large organizations, and a project could be $100,000. And that is mixed on our website with the theme store that's a $50 project or $50 product. I had to take the phone number off because I was getting inundated with phone calls from people who wanted to talk an hour for a $50 product that they wanted to purchase.
Yeah.
So we can no longer pick up the phone. And I hate that that is the case, but it is the case, right? So we push and channel everything through the inquiry form so that we can, you know, try to best utilize our time and then also not waste the prospect's time. I don't want them to get on the phone with me for an hour if we're not anywhere close to being a fit, you know, and I know that. I want to value their time just as much as I want to value my own time.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, because for people that are looking for a freelancer or an agency to help them build a website, if they have an inquiry form on their site, you should use that, because if they ask you, for example, for budget range, and their starting range is $20,000 to build a website, and your budget is $7,500, then it's right out of the gate that's going to tell you that this is probably not a good fit. And you can evaluate that as a purchaser of those services pretty quickly if you see that, and then you can move on to other things or other agencies. When people are coming to you for building a website, what are some of the considerations that go into that that clients often overlook when they're looking at the price of developing a website?
I think that, you know, because people don't create a website very often, you know what I mean? Even though, like, as a developer, I redo ours every year and a half, the average person or the average company doesn't do that, right? So time passes. So they forget what's on their website, what is happening on their website, and they think it's just a quick, you know, quote that you can throw out to them. And it's because they're not considering things like features and functions or the sophistication or the complexity of their design, you know, what really their website is going to do. They're thinking just the website itself as if it's a brochure website and everything's a brochure website. And a lot of times that's not the case. You know, when you start asking them questions, like, you know, you start walking through pages on their website and asking them, well, tell me a little bit about what happens behind the scenes on this page. You know, what is the output of this form? Is it just kicking you an email? Is it integrating to Salesforce? You know, that type of thing that when people are reaching out for quotations, they're not thinking of that, right? It's not happened yet. So I always try to encourage people to document, you know, what their known requirements are. That way we can build upon it together, and then they can use that with other developers to build upon that as well.
Yeah, that's a good starting point for sure. As we coach our prospective clients, and that's always a part of the process. I think you and I are definitely in alignment there. We want to educate people. We want to coach them. How do you coach them on how they can differentiate between the different bids that they get for their website? Most clients, and I encourage mine to do this, will look for multiple bids. They'll talk to several different vendors, and they'll often end up with a very broad range of price points. How do you walk them through the differences in those price points? Because I know in a lot of cases, they're going to look at this and go, okay, well, this one's cheaper than that one. Maybe we should go over here. But they're often not comparing apples to apples.
Yes. So I encourage people to make sure that all of their vendors are quoting to the same deliverables, so they have an apples to apples comparison. I mean, call it an RFP or whatever you'd like to have the term be, but make sure that potential providers have some sort of document that they need to make sure that they're covering, right? Specifications, whether they be visual or technical, they need to be articulated to the vendor base that you're interacting with, so you can make sure that we are all quoting the same thing. I just ran into a bid process this week where I actually lost the opportunity because the company, they're a mid-market company, they are getting excessive funding from overseas, and they're relaunching a new website that's, because their existing one's like 6 years old, right? They declined to go with me because I was too high in price. So instead, they're going with a one-man shop. Now, we quoted out custom templates with a graphic designer based on, their user personas and call to actions. And they don't know if that one-person design firm is going to pull in a Theme Forest theme and just throw in their content for them.
Yeah, I've seen that happen many times, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I've worked with this consultant before who brought me into the process. We've built him websites a couple of times, and I said, I totally understand. Do yourself a favor, qualify this with this vendor, for your client, because it's his client. I'm like, just make sure they're just not going and grabbing a Theme Forest theme, throwing it in there, and calling it good when you think that you're getting a truly custom website, because that may not be the case. And there's that apples to apples comparison. Are you working with a graphic designer? Or a coder. There's a big difference there. The graphic designer who sees white space and understands best practices with usability, huge difference between that and just grabbing a single firm coder to work on your site. And I'm not saying that that's bad, but I'm saying when you compare that to a larger design firm, you do not have apples to apples. There's a significant difference in what the deliverables are and the process.
Yeah, and usually in the capability of that agency to deliver quality work, there are unquestionably people out there that are good at design and good at code, but they are very few and far between.
They're unicorns and they're hard to find.
Yeah, they are really hard to find. And they're going to be expensive too when you find them. But yeah, a lot of times those one-person shops are, and this is by no means a knock against freelancers out there. I did that for a long time before I started to grow my business, but you do have to be careful. If you're getting into a very large project, there are nuances of project management and all these other things that have to get layered into it to make sure that you meet the requirements that they have. So that's interesting.
Absolutely.
So that's actually a good segue into my next question. And that is, if somebody is looking to hire an outside freelancer or an agency, what are some of the key things that you would recommend to them to look for in their chosen vendor?
I think one of the most important elements that you can review, of a developer or an agency, whether one or the other, is are they honest? What kind of feeling do you get when you communicate with them? And that's, and honesty is both present and past. Reputation matters. Client testimonials, industry comments from colleagues, competitors, how do they interact with the industry? How are they presented on the internet? Are there people complaining about their services on Google+? Do they have good reviews? Are they involved in the community, either the WordPress community or the community in which they live and work? I think those go towards the factors of what kind of experience you're going to have. And a lot of times people don't take that into account. They think it's just technology, but it's not. We're going into a relationship with you. If this is a decent sized website and you're a organization, whether you be small business or, an enterprise, we're going to have a multiple month, workflow that we're going to go through. And we need to have some basis of honesty and transparency that we can work from to build upon. So I think that's a huge area that should be a criteria. And many times it is not a criteria.
Yeah. And I like that because those are important factors no matter what size the site is. So if you're a smaller business or you're just getting up and running and doing something with a freelancer or a lower budget is appropriate for you at that stage, then you still can go out and look for people that fit that mold, that are active in their community, that have a good reputation, that maybe come by way of recommendation. So that applies really at any part of the spectrum of size or complexity of website.
It does. I mean, and it could just be pro bono work that they're doing for the local pet foster company. Yeah. I mean, it could be anything. You know what I mean? And I think it shows you the character of the individual or the organization that you would be interacting with.
Yeah, that's a great recommendation. So now let's flip it on its head and look at it from the other angle. And that is, if you are choosing to take on a project for your agency, what are the key things that you look for? And before you start, the reason I want to ask this question is because I think it will give people who are listening to this, who are looking for vendors such as yourself, some better insights into what's really going to make the relationship between the two of you better. So what are those key things for you in choosing to take on a project?
We generally have about five of them, you know, five or six. So the very first one I look at is fit. Is the functional requirements that they have matched up to our expertise? Now, we learn something new with every project, and I love that about what we do, but there has to be a good substance of fit that we've done it before, we have a good solution, you know, that type of thing. Because I don't want that client to have us learn for their project, right? A little learning is great. It keeps it exciting, but a lot of learning, that's more than the client's probably bargaining for. The design requirements. So sometimes we get inspiration sites from people that are just so 1970s or so far from what our graphic designer produces that I just know that we're not going to be a good visual fit. And I tell them that, right? I mean, I'm very honest and say, you know what, we'd love to work with you, but your style that you want isn't anywhere close to what we typically deliver. So I don't think that we would be a suitable solution for you. You know, I'm honest. You know, budget is obviously a criteria. You know, we have a minimum project point that we have for all inclusive websites. And if they're below that or half of that, I just can't manage that because I have overhead. You know, we've got a firm, I've got a lot of different, you know, hosting servers and software that we use that we have to be able to support. So that's definitely something that would qualify people out. Technical aptitudes one, you know, does, and it's not that I would disqualify somebody, but it goes into that factor of that factoring of whether they're a good client for us. You know, how knowledgeable is the client with technology and their expectations? And it's, we love to teach people. We love to teach people about SEO for sure, and how that interacts with their website. But we need to make sure that they're going to be up to understanding and learning and it taking part in the process. Because I think that falls into the project scope and scope creep. You know, if they're not going to understand project scope and it's going to be challenging for them, that's kind of a red flag for me. You know, we're willing to adjust project scope and work with that, but we want to make sure that we're kind of on the same level for that. And then my last one is it going to be fun, challenging? Is it something new? Because I love to learn. My team loves to learn, and we want to be able to, you know, work with a variety of types of clients and bring that fun into our daily lives because we spend so much time doing it.
All good criteria. I definitely strongly agree with the fun one. I think we've all had projects or been part of projects that were, you know, tedious or tiresome or just fun in no way, shape, or form. And unfortunately, that also takes a toll on the relationship. So anything we can do to make it equally interesting is definitely helpful.
Yeah. Or if it just hits a personal note.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm a type 1 diabetic and I have my kids in trials for that or research studies. And if someone comes to me with a project related to that, I'm all in. I'm going to do whatever I can because you've just hit an emotional soft spot with me, you know, that I want to really help and do good.
Yeah, actually, that reminds me of a quick story. We took on, my wife and I are both big fans and supporters of the arts locally here in Dallas. And there's a small organization that does chamber music based here. And they're really, really small nonprofit. I think they have one, maybe two full-time employees and just not a big budget, but they're doing great concerts and great work. And a couple years ago, we had an opportunity to gift a Christmas gift kind of through another organization to somebody. And one of the requests was this organization said, we need a new website. And I went out and looked at their website and it's pretty awful. And they just didn't have the capacity to update it or to hire somebody. So we took that on. And it was just a good feeling, a chance to give back and help somebody out that's already doing a lot of good work. So yeah, things that are close to your heart tend to work their way in there, even if they're not projects that you would always take on. So
absolutely.
And actually, I think that's a good criteria for somebody that may be in that situation, particularly nonprofits, but there are a lot of different types of organizations that may need help with a website or with their technology in general. And if they're trying to find somebody to help them, I wouldn't suggest always looking for free help because that can't come back to bite you. But if you can find a firm that specializes in your area or a freelancer that has a particular passion for what you are already doing, odds are that that web development experience is going to be better for you and for them. So seek out the people that are, you know, focused on what you're doing as well.
Absolutely.
Have a passion for that. So, okay, let's get back into the pricing discussion. How do you guys price your projects? So you've gathered some information. I've come to you and said, okay, here's everything I know. You've asked some questions. How do you actually make a decision on what that price is going to be?
So from the buildup of the estimate, I have known costs, you know, for standard builds based on different size of websites and a core amount of templates that go into it. You know, we have historical data in Basecamp over the last, I think, 4 years or something. So I have a lot of data to pull from, and I update my cost structure every year to make sure that it's current. And so I start with that basis, and then I add on additional costs for enhanced functionality, whether we're going to custom code a plug, like a custom post type or a plugin, or we're going to, you know, work with a major plugin that we need to integrate and style and set up and populate for them. So, you know, so that's an add-on. Number of design templates is also an add-on, you know, custom templates that we have. I mean, sometimes we have, you know, 10 extra custom design templates that are going into a project that has design and coding time associated with it. The size of the website, if we're doing SEO and content migration, size definitely is an impact, you know, number of pages or posts or products that we need to migrate in and optimize and do keyword research for. And then my last one is risk. You know, I think with every client, you have some level of risk financially, and it could be very, very small, or it could be very, very large based on, you know, your concern with the client's understanding of scope, or the client has a lot of unknowns that you need to work through. And so that I do adjust for that risk factor. So if I suspect something's going to happen, and I really, really strong, like my gut tells me from experience, it's going to happen, I just try to add that in there as a cushion. So once we're inside the project, it doesn't cause a problem. We can just manage through it and not have to discuss numbers. I don't do that very often, but when I have that feeling where it is needed, I do it because I don't want to have to have my client have a bad experience because of it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because we do a very similar approach. It's no fun to have to go back to a customer, and certainly customers don't like having the conversation either of, okay, now we're really starting to get off out of scope here, and this is going to cost more if you want to keep going down this road. And sometimes a little bit of cushion in there gives you some leeway to work with them, assuming things don't go too far off the rails.
Yeah. And I only do it when I see it,
yeah.
You know, and I see it's a potential and the client just doesn't have the answers, you know, or yeah. They really want to learn. You can tell they're really struggling with technology. I'm taking them, I'm training them, you know, we're going to educate them and we're going to make a success for them. I'm just going to have a little bit of cushion in there to help cover that.
Yeah. And that actually summarizes a good point for anybody that's listening to this, that's going to start looking for somebody to build them a website. The more research you do, the more information you have before you even start the process, the more successful your project will be and the more accurate your bids are going to be. And ultimately, it will probably help keep the cost of what you are doing down, because you're going to sync up with the right agency. They're going to have all the information. There isn't going to be the need for us to look at that and go, wow, they don't know half of what they need to know, so I'm going to have to pad this a little bit, because there's definitely going to be scope creep here.
Yep.
So good stuff. Okay. So as we get into that, now somebody's gathered their information, they've come out and started looking for their people. A lot of times customers don't want to share their budget or don't even have a budget established. When you ask the question, you know, do you have a budget for this project? I always ask that question. And they don't want to share it or they don't have one. What do you say to them?
It's not a stopper for me. In 99% of the cases, you know, we just try to work through the rest of the knowns that they're willing to share. And if we can, you know, if everything else in the project seems like a good fit, and the only thing is they won't tell us, you know, where they're at with pricing, I will go ahead and prepare a proposal, knowing that most likely I'm going to be above what they're expecting, right? Just because if they're not going to give you any number, that means they have not done their research. They could potentially think they're getting a solution for 10% of what it's actually going to cost. I'm still moving forward because I've already done the due diligence with them. And I think that the relationship we've established thus far deserves that type of output, right? If I have other red flags from them where they're just not answering any questions, and that happens frequently, you know, you give them a list of questions that try to help you to do initial qualification and you get one word answers back, I'm usually going to exit because the lack of information and the lack of budget is kind of a warning sign to me that they're not really ready to proceed or that they are not fully invested in the process. And it's difficult to make that a success. So that's a huge warning sign for me. I do try to, though, tell people that transparency in the process, even with the financials, is good for both sides. I mean, it helps me understand whether we are building that Ford Focus or we're going to be building the Mercedes-Benz, and allows me to know how much leeway we have with being creative with both technology and design. You know, and if you hold back that information, then it's a guessing game for us, and we really don't know where we stand, and we don't know how far we can go with creating a great solution specifically for you, the client.
Yeah. And I think in some cases as well, at least in my experience, people have not wanted to share budget numbers for fear that the person they're talking to is just going to go ahead and max that budget out. And, you know, for anybody that's listening to this, I think that's an understandable concern. But if you're working with a reputable agency, it's really not what's going to happen. We might max your budget out if you've asked for a lot of stuff. At the same time, if what you really need and what you have asked for falls far underneath the budget that you have established, that's a good problem to have. We can mm-hmm. look at some things that you might like to have that could be added in, or we can just say, look, it's not going to cost that much. Here's what it's going to take. And we do that not only because it's the honest and right thing to do, but because we also do want to build a long-term relationship with those clients so that when they have other needs and other projects, and when the redesign comes 2 or 3 years down the road, they're going to come back to us with that work.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So, okay, we're going to finish up here. And I always ask the same variation or a variation of the same question on every episode of Technology Translated. And that is, for somebody who's just getting started, looking for someone to build them a website, what one or two pieces of advice would you give them?
Well, since we've already recorded this, I have four.
Awesome.
I have more because I have thought about this even since our first discussion. So the first one would be document what you know. And then as you speak with vendors and potential providers, continue to add to that documentation with what you learn. So you have kind of a living, breathing list of what your project is and what you want it to be. And that includes, you know, goals and objectives and everything. The next one is over-communicate. You know, as a vendor, I'm never going to tell someone they're over-communicating with me in the sales process. The more I know about you and your requirements and your goals and objectives, the more I can help deliver the right solution for you, both in a proposal and an actual execution. My third one is, it's a business decision, and remember that. Don't sign with me because you love me. And I have people say that. We just really like you. We felt so good with you on the phone. I do want that to be the case, but I also want you to come back to ROI and making sure that you're going to get payback for the website and not just the fact that I gave you a warm and fuzzy feeling. I think it's got to be a blend, right? It definitely has to be a blend. And my fourth one, which is counterintuitive to that warm and fuzzy feeling, if you get a gut feeling for a provider that they're something's off, right? Or they're just kind of hokey or just not right, go with that gut feeling and pull out. It's okay to tell us that, you know, you've decided we're not a good fit, because there are developers out there who are not credible and are not being honest and who do take money and don't deliver. We get emails from people all the time that have gotten themselves into that situation. So I've hired people, you know, I've done trials with them for projects where they keep giving you excuses for why things aren't going to get delivered, or, you know, why they're unavailable, things like that. If you run into that situation and you start to feel it, you let your gut speak to you and pull out, and, you know, it'll treat you well as you execute the project with somebody else.
Sound advice across the board. And, you know, as I'm thinking about this conversation, I don't know that we have exactly answered the question, because we really can't, of how much it costs to build a website. There's too many variables there, but I really feel like we've hopefully given people a lot to think about in understanding what goes into the building of a website, the things that they need to consider, so that they can have a better understanding of building that budget and what it's actually, you know, why they're going to get different bids and what it's actually going to end up costing them in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, Rebecca, I'm going to let you go here. You've already given me far more of your time than I deserve. But thank you very much for coming back on to re-record this. I will let you know when this goes live. And for everybody else that's out there, if you have any questions about how much it costs to build a website, you are always welcome to hit us up at using the hashtag AskTechTrans. And we look at your questions and we will circle back with you with some answers either on social media or on a future episode. So Rebecca, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Technology Translated is brought to you by the Rainmaker platform, the complete website solution for content marketers and online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform.